Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show. Maybe this is the 21st already. I'm not sure. The 20th or 21st of November. Boy, it's being a vegetarian, I won't be eating much turkey tonight or any other time, and I have a bird on my shoulder right now, so I'm into birds. Tonight's guest is Clark Guerin. I guess he was on quite a while ago. He's an attorney, and he's got a lot of good opinions. He's got a cool show. I watch him on YouTube a lot in out of Palm Springs, but he's all over the Internet. Clark, welcome back, man. It's glad to have you back on our show after a long hiatus.
Thank you. Nice to be back.
What have you been doing?
Well, I've just been doing my show, practicing some law, watching these fools destroy just about everything.
Yeah, I guess you probably agree that this is not creeping fascism. This is running at full speed fascism.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, one of the things that I sat and looked at is how much George W. Bush stole from us.
How many trillions?
No. He stole something much more important. He
our
stole
freedoms.
Who
yeah.
we are as a people. He made us frightened.
Yeah.
And that was his key to everything. He made us frightened, so we gave up our rights. He made us frightened, so we invaded other countries. We've been running the last 8 years on fear.
Right,
and
I agree.
That's not who we are. It was FDR who said, we have nothing left to fear but fear itself. And that's what, instead of teaching us not to be afraid as FDR did, Bush has just been working to make us more and more afraid.
And it's just the way it sounds like Hitler's little plan.
Well, except that Hitler was really smart enough to have a plan.
Yeah, that's true.
One of the things that's really dramatic is the difference between congenital brilliance that we're seeing now from Obama, and congenital stupidity, which is what you see from Bush. I mean, I sat there watching those hearings.
Right.
With Paulson, when he's up there explaining why he decided not to buy these toxic assets.
Yeah.
And, I mean, talk about a lying sack of you-know-what.
Yeah.
They obviously have no idea what they are doing. The truth is, these toxic assets are so bad that they're now even afraid to buy it.
Wow.
See, what they did, and lest people get the idea that I only have bad comments for Republicans and Bush, this all started under the Clinton administration. Not a lot of people know that. But you had Alan Greenspan,
I remember him,
and Robert
well.
Rudin, who was then the Secretary of the Treasury for Clinton. And you had a gal who was in charge of regulating commodity futures. And that was when they started basically turning home mortgages into securities, which could be sold as a future interest.
Right.
And this is something most people don't understand, so let me try and explain it.
I'd barely understand. This is fascinating.
Let's say, you know, and everybody, I always wonder, why is everybody all big on these variable rate mortgages? What's so great about them? Well, what they do is they get a package together of maybe 10,000 variable rate mortgages that are paying 1%. But they know in 5 years they're going up to 9%. So basically they project what they're going to make at 9%, and they get someone to pay by putting in a security with a whole bunch of things. They get people to pay what the asset would be worth with its principal earning, and then earning 9% a year.
Right.
So somebody has come in and not just bought the mortgages for their face value, they've paid a huge premium to have an asset making 9% when the most you could get on a T-bill was about 3%.
Now, were there a lot of Chinese doing that? I've heard that they even sent troops over here to evict people from their homes.
Oh, everybody was doing it. I haven't heard anything about Chinese sending troops over here, but
yeah,
everybody was doing it. It went worldwide, these things, because, I mean, wouldn't you love to make 9% on your money instead
yeah,
of 3% or 12% on your money instead of 3%?
Yeah.
If it's too good to be true, generally it is, but To go back to my story, this gal, and I apologize to her because I really forget her name. She wanted to regulate the sale of these mortgages, the securitization of these mortgages of the future interest. She wanted to regulate it. And Greenspan and Rubin said, no, 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 you can't do that. They went to Congress and they had legislation passed that specifically deprived her of the ability to regulate these future interests. And the Congress was all busy. They found time to take a moment out of the impeachment trial over Monica to go and pass these laws. It's probably the only damn laws they passed during that to make sure that this mortgage securitization was off and running.
Very interesting.
And
yeah,
that started with Clinton.
Okay.
So Democrats do not come out of this blame-free.
Right.
And we can't just say it's because Bush is stupid and he don't know what's going on, because there have been a lot of terms we have for Slick Willie and his Slick Willie, but stupid never was one of them.
Right.
So that's when it started, and then it was just off to the races. And that's why nobody, because they were able to sell these mortgages securities, the guy who made the loan never really cared whether you were going to pay for it, because his money was out. It was basically, you remember the game we played as kids, pin the tail on the donkey?
Yeah.
That's what this was, a massive game of pin the tail on the donkey.
Well, now, like if I had a loan with Bank of America or First Interstate, or any of those banks, that bank would have sold. I see they do that a lot. They're doing that with car loans, high-end car loans.
Yeah, they would have. They would have sold it to somebody who turned it into a security,
yeah,
and had hundreds of thousands of people invest in your mortgages pooled with a bunch of others.
Yeah. Now, what were some of the companies that were doing this? Is there actually a name for some of these companies? Or
everybody?
Huh?
It's easier to define those who weren't doing it. Those who weren't doing it were the really basis of our banking system. Small banks, mostly in, as we, what they love to call, Main Street.
Right.
I actually have a CD at one of them in a nice little town in Iowa.
Right.
And this guy's, you go to bankrate.com, his bank's in the top 10 of all the banks.
Wow.
And you know what he says? He hates the FDIC.
Wow.
He hates federal deposit insurance.
Right, exactly.
And you know why?
Why?
Because nobody has to look at the safety of the bank. They're insured by the federal government, so nobody cares that his bank is safer than everybody else's. If there wasn't insurance, people would actually look at the safe way he operated his bank.
Wow.
That's a really interesting perspective, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
But it was really at the end of the Clinton administration that all of the protections that were put on by Franklin D. Roosevelt started coming off wholesale.
Right.
You know, the merging of banks and insurance companies, banks and investment houses, it all came off. And that started under Clinton. So the fact that Bush is congenital stupid does not really change, you know, is not really the whole reason for it. Now, of course, there's a, you know, congenital stupid has a lot to do with Iraq.
Oh, yeah, they messed
that up.
That's
a whole other issue.
Yeah, another issue. Now, with Clinton, who, I know he didn't seem to have, he had some money when he went in office, but when he came out, he seemed like he was quite wealthy.
No, actually, when he came out, he owed a bunch of attorney fees, but he's been doing speaking. You know, people pay him hundreds of thousands of dollars to go give a speech.
Yeah, I know about
to
that.
To go circulate.
Well, who came up with it? Was this Alan Greenspan that came up with the bright idea that that we should go ahead and sell all these mortgages from all these banks?
No, that was coming from the market, and it was Greenspan and Rubin who didn't want to interfere with the market, who didn't want to stop the regulation of it.
Oh, okay.
You know, and it was a gal who understood future interest who said, hey, this is a sale of a commodity future interest. We got to do something about this. This was a runaway train going ahead.
Yeah, I can believe that.
But the problem with Bush, I mean, sit and imagine the way he responded to Katrina.
Yeah,
and realize that's how he's responding to the home mortgage crisis.
Yeah. Zero.
And what was amazing was to sit and watch the testimony of Paulson.
Yeah.
And they also had the gal who's now the chairman of the Federal Deposit Insurance Company, and they also had Bernanke there. And none of those two guys really care anything about foreclosures, even though that's the root of the problem. They don't care about it. What I never understood, which I finally got, you know, people are trying to renegotiate their homes, their loans.
Right.
With the servicer.
I see that starting to happen, right.
Well, listen to this. The servicer gets paid a lot more money to foreclose on the property than they do to do a workout.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? You're going to do what makes the most money.
Yeah.
So that's why nobody can negotiate with the loan servicers. They don't want to negotiate. They just want to take the homes. They don't care because it's not their money. They're the servicer.
Right.
They don't care. They get paid no matter what. They don't care. They just go around and deal with the, you know, they're representing the guy who owns the mortgage, but they're not representing them very well. It's just,
yeah, I can see your point.
It's just Katrina.
Where is this going anyway? I mean, are people going to, you think the economy eventually will come back around where people can get more houses or get their houses back? Or once they're foreclosed on, I guess they don't have it. They
well,
have to go to the auction.
Here's
like
a, here's,
to get it
Fred, here's an interesting.
In Laguna Beach, where I have a place over there, every other five houses is owned by a bank now and foreclosed on. Over
Fred,
there.
Listen to this one. This is a statistic from the an article in the Washington Post.
Right.
If homeowners had been able to reorganize their debt in bankruptcy, three out of every four foreclosures would have never happened.
Wow. What was wrong with the bankruptcy laws changed now? I know they've tightened them up quite a bit.
No, they actually changed in 1978 to stop homeowners from reorganizing their home. Now, for example, let's talk about you told me you live in Temecula. And you have a second home in Laguna Beach, right?
Right.
This we'll call a rental.
Right.
You can go into bankruptcy and reduce the debt on your home in Laguna Beach to what it's worth now. But
yeah.
You can't go into bankruptcy to change the loan on your primary home in Temecula. What kind of sense does that make?
Yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, the biggest thing that gets me crazy is when these people start arguing, well, we got to have personal responsibility. Well, what's wrong with the bank having personal responsibility? Why is it only the homeowner who needs to be responsible?
Yeah.
But we are finally getting these ideologues. The Bush people are our ideologues, and they're finally going to be replaced by people who are competent. And maybe then we're going to finally figure out as a nation that you can't put people running our government who don't accept something basic like the theory of evolution as a science.
Right.
If your thought process is so defective that you disregard the idea of the theory of evolution, you are probably not smart enough to be in government.
That's probably about half.
You're probably not smart enough to be entrusted with our money and with our safety.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I love. We now have a guy who's really smart. I mean, the last guy we had in office with this kind of intelligence was John F. Kennedy.
Right. And he didn't last very long, unfortunately.
No, but, one of my friends who I met through doing my show was Tim Naftali, who was the chairman of the history department at Harvard. And he wrote a book with a guy from Russia called Kennedy, Khrushchev, Castro, A Hell of a Gamble, The Cuban Missile Crisis. They were able to get in the Russian papers.
Right.
And one of the projects he did after that, he went to Charlottesville, North Carolina, to listen to all the tapes of the presidents from Eisenhower on down to, obviously it stopped with Nixon, they stopped taping.
Right, yeah.
And one of the things he told me was that he was really surprised when he listened to the private conversations of Kennedy, because this man had a genius and a knowledge of world affairs that he didn't realize that he really had.
Wow.
And that's coming from somebody I really admire. Now he's the curator of the Nixon Museum down here in Placentia.
Oh, okay.
But he's a brilliant historian. And we haven't had somebody, and I'm not knocking Reagan. Reagan was a very bright guy. I'm not saying that Reagan was, I'm not talking about Reagan's intelligence or Johnson's or anything like that, but there's a difference between people who are politicians and people who were true intellectuals. JFK was a true intellectual.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he went through Harvard. He belonged there. He didn't just do like Bush did at Princeton and get passed as a C student because he's part of the Bush family.
Got pushed through, right? Bulldozed through.
Like maybe Teddy did.
Yeah.
But, and this guy Obama was, he wasn't pushed through either. He got there on his own. He's truly a brilliant guy.
Yeah, and he's very confident, which is great.
And he's the last guy, Kennedy was the last guy who was willing to hire people who knew more than he did about certain areas.
Yeah, I think Obama's in that same league, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He seems to be doing it, too. I mean, people... one of the comments I heard as he's going on, I said, well, the one thing I'll say about this pick, he's really bright. He's really going to do the job he's hired to do. He's really going to do the job he's hired for. She's really going to do the job she's hired to do.
Yeah, well, that's a nice thing. People, at least, you know, the way you're describing it, it's they are hired by our people to do a job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bush was the kind of guy you'd hire, and he goes in the back room and smoke something and sit there all day long, you know, and hides.
Well, remember, too, your success as a president is in large part determined by what your problems are.
Yeah.
Now, Clinton had a real, basically overall, real successful presidency other than Monica.
Yeah.
But then he didn't have any real problems either.
No, he really didn't.
His big problem was to balance the budget.
Yeah, and he did a good job.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like the same thing, you know, as we went to almost a decade here, and it's flipped right back to same problem, is only worse now. You know, I think we're hopefully a Democrat will fix the thing and get our economy back on track. How long do you think it'll take before? I don't think, you know, first of all, even though all these people are being laid off and the unemployment rate's up to 7%, I still feel that a lot of people still have money. They're just afraid to spend it. I think the news is pushing this, you know. I mean, today, if you have a thunderstorm in Fullerton, they're going to say a hurricane's coming. The news people just push things way out of proportion. And I think that's somewhat helping the slowdown of the day-to-day spending.
It certainly
a lot of people,
is. I'll give you another example of the same thing.
Yeah.
Now, I think you're old enough to have remembered the day that President Kennedy was assassinated.
I was working at NASA. I'll never forget it. I remember the building I was standing in. I was standing by a big cargo bay door in the Compton facility, and I heard it on the news just as we were taking a coffee break. I'll never forget it.
And that was 4 days of national mourning.
Exactly.
Real grief.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Now, when Princess Diana died...
Yeah.
They put this wall-to-wall coverage in, and it duplicated the effect.
Right.
Now, last time I checked, the only reason that she was particularly famous was because she couldn't satisfy her man.
Yeah.
You know, and why the hell did Americans care about Princess Diana? Why the hell would Americans get all that down because this broad who used to be a princess was killed running away from paparazzi?
Right.
This didn't make sense, but they were able to duplicate this national grief. It's just what the media does. It's like brainwashing.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's exactly what is happening, and they did somewhat the same thing, although it was certainly the grief was more justified with 9/11.
Right.
And I'm not at all trying to liken 9/11 to Princess Di and say that the grief wasn't appropriate or wasn't was overstated or anything like that. I'm just saying it was really accentuated by the coverage.
Exactly.
And I think that is happening with this crisis too. Although it is a fairly decent sized crisis, it is getting good. But you know, John McCain and And just to, I'll clear the air, I did go and vote for Obama.
Right.
I just couldn't find a good reason to vote for John McCain. I spent a lot of time looking for one. I couldn't find it.
Yeah, I like McCain as who he is, but not as president.
But the thing that I saw, you know, I lost my train of thought, Red. I was going some other place when before I qualified myself on that, and I lost my train of thought. I apologize. What were we talking about before?
Yeah, we were talking about, you know, you didn't vote for John McCain.
Yeah, but before I said that.
Oh, well, you'd voted for Obama. Before that, I don't know where we
were
going.
Yeah, I don't know where I was going either. I was doing that to qualify because I was going to say something about the complete failure of McCain to articulate a reason to vote for him. I mean, all he could do was tell me what was wrong with Obama. Most of it not.
Yeah, that was what he did.
And all he could do was tell me why I should be afraid of Obama.
Yeah.
Well, I was afraid of him. He wanted to do more war. I thought that was eminently more frightening.
What do you think when he brought Sarah Palin? What was your
opinion? Oh, you mean the empty suit?
Huh?
The empty suit?
Yeah.
That's what I call her, the empty suit.
Oh, I like that, yeah.
But, you know, I mean, women, man, you know, even the, you talk about old Sarah, those women will come after you. Even the rabid feminists will come after you.
Yeah, they will.
They want to defend her. Why, I don't know.
Yeah, I think we might have a caller on the line. Hang on. Is there a caller there? Hello? We've got noise on the line, I guess.
Well, call back. We'll be nice to you.
Yeah, we're nice to people.
But, you know, she really finished it for me with King. But I think
I don't condone what she was doing, but the hunting wolves out of a helicopter scene. I'd seen that earlier in a magazine article about a year ago, but I didn't put two and two together until the media brought that up.
You should see her. You should see the latest thing on her. She's pardoning a turkey, and she's giving an interview while they're slaughtering other turkeys in the background on the air.
Wow. Jeez, I could just see her going to the White House where Bush used to pardon the turkey, and then she'd shoot it right after it got pardoned.
Anyway, but the thing that's frightening to me are all the people who were energized by her nomination. They think this person's qualified to be president, and I think that people who think she's qualified to be president are not qualified to vote.
Yeah, well... You know, they did a survey the other day on the news about people asking general questions about our history going back 100, 150 years and current politics. And about 49% of the nation doesn't know anything about anything. They barely know that there is a person named Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Then they did the same thing with a bunch of politicians, and they got a 44% rating out of them. It was even lower than the general public.
Yeah.
They're not very bright out there, unfortunately.
Well, no, and I mean, you know, but what really bothers me about this current group of Republicans.
Yeah.
I do not see how you allow Katrina to happen.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about the hurricane. Bush can't stop the hurricane. I don't see how you let that disaster go on. If I'd have been president at that time, instead of going over in my plane, I'd have landed my helicopter, and I got to my military unit. I said, you, and you. You're volunteers. You go here. You go there. I'd have done something. I'd have said, I don't care. I'm going to go do something. You don't like it, you can take me to court later and say I exceeded power. I don't give a damn. I'm going to help people.
Right, exactly.
I mean, if you don't want to help people, why be a politician?
Yeah. Well, you know, a friend of mine was one of my clients, actually. Was one of the directors of FEMA, an elderly lady.
Mm-hmm.
And she was down there when Bush was around, and she was horrified at how FEMA was behaving. And they were actually blocking Red Cross. As you probably know this, Red Cross supplies are trying to come in to help people. They would turn them around and send them away, the Red Cross.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was amazing. I never did understand what the political motives were, if any, of such actions.
Well, it's not a motive. It's stupidity.
Yeah.
That's the same thing that happened to us in Iraq. Now, I was dead set against Iraq.
So was I.
From the beginning. But I, you know, I still try and read things, and I read those books by Bob Woodward. I've read every one of them.
Right.
And one of the things that amazed me was I was wrong. The Iraq War was winnable.
Right.
We won the war. We could have run the peace. We could have rebuilt. But the problem was the criteria for hiring the people to build Iraq.
Right.
Now, you had experience in nation building in Somalia or in Yugoslavia. Oh, no, we don't want you. We don't want anybody who has experience. And particularly because you're against, you're in favor of Roe versus Wade. For starters, we can't employ anybody over there who's not against Roe versus Wade.
Right.
Now, if that becomes your litmus test for being in charge over there, no wonder we have such a mess.
Yeah. Well, I guess General Petraeus was the only one that was bright enough to see about rebuilding part of Iraq. I mean,
mm-hmm.
It seems like he was trying to do some of the things that needed to be done, but I don't know what... Well, you know, Cheney, of course, Cheney, what's he's been indicted now, and...
Yeah, don't hold your breath on that.
Yeah, I'm not.
But, no, what I liked about, well, see, the guy they originally had there, I forget his name, they had an army guy who was doing the same things Petraeus ended up doing.
Okay.
And then this idiot Bremer is brought in and made in charge. And as I say, what's his qualification? He doesn't believe in Roe versus Wade. That was his only qualification.
Yeah.
And he, I mean, he made a complete mess of it. It was unbelievable. He had no idea what he was doing. And it became, you know, they think that Petraeus is bringing something out of there, but we haven't got anything. They still hate us. And Bush
Halliburton's still over there.
Huh?
Halliburton's still over there. Yeah. They're making a ton of money off the whole deal.
Well, I don't know about that. What I heard today is fascinating, the new agreement we have with Iraq.
Yeah.
One of the big problems was they couldn't prosecute the contractors for what they did in Iraq.
Interesting.
Then the new deal... They have now removed that. They can prosecute the contractors for what they did in Iraq, both now and before.
Wow.
All their immunity is gone. I got a hunch those contractors are going to be on the next flight out of town.
I would think so. I think we got a caller now. Is there a caller there?
Yes.
Hi. What's your name?
Hi, Dr. Bale. I'm Jeannie in Arkansas.
Where are you calling from?
Arkansas.
Okay, how are you doing? What's your question?
Can you tell?
Hi, I'm glad to have you with us. Are you anywhere near that bridge to the future that Bill Clinton built?
Well, of course.
What do you think of his? What do you think of his presidential museum?
I think it's awesome. I like Bill too.
Well, I like Bill too, but I was really disappointed in the museum. I was there a few years ago, and I was kind of disappointed in the way it told the story. But it's a magnificent building. I got to give them that.
I haven't been all the way through it yet, so I look forward to seeing the rest of it. But
I'll tell you something. You're close to this. If you like presidential museums, you've
mm-hmm.
got to go see the Lincoln Museum in Springfield, Illinois. It just opened a couple of years ago.
I heard about that.
It is the most fantastic presidential museum I've ever seen, and I've seen just about all of them.
Well,
it's a real 3D experience. I recommend that to you and any other listeners out there.
I'll look forward to it down the road a bit.
So what was your question?
What was your question?
Well, my question is, my receptor was just delivered today.
Oh, good.
And I had it around my neck, and I was hoping there were some instructions with it.
Well, there should be a booklet.
Fill me in a little bit on what to do and what to expect and how to best make the best use of it.
Yeah, well, we have to, you know, that there should be a booklet with it.
I didn't see one unless I missed it, but I did not see one.
Well, give us a call on Monday, and we'll get that straightened out for you at the office.
Okay.
Yeah.
And because I'm really looking forward to it, and hopefully down the road can get... Now, if I understood correctly, you should start with the receptor before going to the projector.
Right, exactly. You should wear it for a while.
And so on one of the shows where you were talking with, I don't know if it was Steve or someone else, you were talking about cleaning the receptors versus the projectors.
Yeah, you clean it, just rinse it off in water once a day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But you can wear it pretty well nonstop for a while?
Yeah, nonstop.
Don't have to take it off or anything?
No.
I like that. And I'm looking forward to, I just did get it. I've only had it on maybe about 30, 45 minutes.
Yeah, now, and in your neighborhood, have you got a lot of foreclosures going around in your part of the town?
Yes, there are. And my daughter does reverse mortgages in Iowa.
Okay. Hey, what's the deal with those reverse mortgages, Clark? What are those anyway? I don't quite understand them.
People with equity.
Well, they're for people, you got to be at least 62 years old.
Yeah.
And what they will do is they will put a loan on your house, and you don't make any payments, and you get to live in your house until you die.
Oh, okay.
Now, they will, if you have a loan on it, they will pay it off. If you have a loan, if you have it free and clear, or even if you have a loan and some equity, they'll give you some, and they'll either give you a lump sum or they'll pay you out every month. It makes a good piece of retirement income for people who have basically got one home, had their mortgage, paid it off, and then when they get to be 62, they just start drawing out of their home. Now, what it does is it eliminates your ability to have an inheritance because the home, the mortgage itself is very expensive. So it's not a good thing to put on a reverse mortgage in most situations, unless you're planning on dying in the house, then it's a great deal.
Oh, okay. But if you'd have to have equity in your house for them to be interested, though, right?
No, they will do it just to pay off your mortgage, and then you'll be able to live in your house without paying the payment on it.
What if you had a $200,000 house and you owed $185,000 on it? Generally
won't loan that much to value. I think they don't do much more than about 50 to 75% of value.
Oh, okay.
So that is something they do to cover themselves. You're not going to get a reverse mortgage at 95 or 100% of current value.
Okay.
But
there's a lot of people that it is beneficial to, but there's those that would not benefit from it as well.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
If you've been a financially conservative person, you bought your house, you've been paying on it for 10, 20 years, and then you get to where you're retiring and you want to have your income down and you want to do more, it is it's a great program for an awful lot of people.
Exactly.
The biggest problem is if you're planning on leaving a lot of money to your kids, it's probably not a good thing to do.
Yeah.
That's when the kids tell you, enjoy your money, we'll make our own.
Yeah, I always tell them, I said, look, let the kids make their own. You owe your kids to raise them, you owe them as much education as you can buy them, and then you owe them to put them on their own.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, you probably didn't get any inheritance when your parents died, and your kids don't need to get one either.
Exactly.
And you sure don't need to sacrifice to give them one.
That's what my kids say. They said, Mom, you spend it yourself. You earned it. Anyway, I have one other question, too. And I'll be keeping you posted on what happens with my reception. I would like to visit, but I'm also wondering if you got moved, Dr. Bell.
Moved? Yeah, we got moved, but now we're unpacking. That's another month or two.
So where exactly did you move to?
Oh, we're in the Temecula area now.
Oh, okay.
But it's just a larger place because they're working on the X1 healing machine here.
Good. Do you ever, and I noticed you also need help, do you use any out-of-town help like online or tele?
We're okay right now. We got a lot of local people helping us out now.
Well, I'm a good telecommuter.
Okay.
Keep that in mind.
I will.
Well, I won't keep you any longer. I just very much enjoy your show. I very much admire and respect what you do, where you've been and where you're going to, and look forward to joining you on some of those journeys.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Okay.
Clark, another thing, you know, the stock market.
You mean the casino on Wall Street?
Yeah, the casino on Wall Street. I like how you. That's always been my opinion of that. Always.
It didn't used to be that way. Back when you were working down there at Nassau when President Kennedy was shot.
Yeah.
Stocks were selling for 10, 11 times earnings. That's an investment.
Uh-huh.
A stock that's selling for 500 times earnings is a lottery.
Okay.
The only value to it, the only way you can make any money on the stock is to find somebody who's stupid enough to pay you more than you paid the other person for it.
Yeah, it's just to me, it's an endless pyramid scheme.
Well, but it's gotten worse because you have all of these hedge funds and trading funds, all these people who claim they're going to, you need to give them, all these investment people claim, well, give me the money because I study this. I can get a higher return than you do.
Yeah,
that's
like
very
stock
interesting
brokers.
Because
yeah.
I have a big block of money. It's well into eight figures.
Right.
And my philosophy with it is to buy, like Warren Buffett's, I want to buy a stock that's value and hold it.
Right. How do you know what's valuable?
Unless well, it was a lot easier. Well, okay, it's real simple. You pick, I'll give you a crash course. Pick a company like General Electric.
Okay.
They are in a lot of areas. They are very well run. They have a low debt ratio.
Okay.
And this is a company that's not going to go out of business. They have a lot of good, solid products, most of them defense.
Right.
They're taking a hit right now because of the financial sector. They had GE Capital Credit. But, you know, they're overall, I mean, you're not going to, long-term, you're not going to lose money on GE. ABC Disney's another one.
Yeah.
Too big to fail. Disney is the only movie company that makes a movie that people will go see because of the name of the producer.
Right.
Nobody goes to see a movie because it's made by MGM or Paramount or Universal. People go to see a movie because it's made by Walt Disney.
Right.
And they got those parks, which are just cash hogs. They got their film library. They release their films every 7 years. You know, they have a shelf life. Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, which came out in 1939, still makes money.
That's pretty good, yeah. I like that.
They have a franchise. New kids, new movies.
Yeah.
But
how about Raytheon? Raytheon, I almost invested in them a while back because I used to work with them, you know, as a contractor. And I thought they were pretty progressive. Are they pretty good? They do defense and television.
Another
defense,
one, or
they,
North American.
They're pretty broadband, too. Are they any good, do you think?
Yeah,
you
well, I haven't looked at them because I happen to have a bunch of North American Rockwell, which is
that's who I used to work for.
Already enough in that. And then Boeing.
That's part of Phillips, though, right? Is Phillips and Rockwell, aren't they together now?
No, Phillips is it's somewhere in Scandinavia.
Okay.
But as I say, they, a company like that, you pick your sector, Walmart, you pick companies that are dominant, that are long-term, and there you go. That's my philosophy. And a guy was telling me, these investment guys were getting a hold of me telling, well, that's the old way of doing things, buy and hold, buy and hold.
Right.
I got that actually from my mother. She used to trade in stocks, and she woke up one day, you know?
Yeah.
As soon as I buy the stock, it goes down. As soon as I sell it, it goes up.
Yeah.
So I figured out how to stop half my mistakes. If I never sell anything, that'll stop half of my mistakes.
Yeah, that'll work.
And so that, and they would tell me that was old thinking, that was not good. Well, one of my client who was managing, who had him in these funds, he finally got tired of listening to me complain, unloaded when the market was at 13,000 and just went out of it. Boy, is he happy now.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is, it's all these philosophies that, well, it's just like a game of poker or craps. They're sitting there trying to figure out how to get the odds ahead, how to get the odds. How do I make the profit for this month? How do I make the profit for next month? And we've gotten away from how do you run a good company.
Yeah, yeah, these CEOs, they get a ton of money. I think we have another caller. Hello, caller, is there a caller there?
Yeah, Dr. Fred.
Yeah, who's this?
This is Richard.
Okay. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Kentucky right now.
Okay, great.
What's Hi, Richard. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing fantastic. Dr. Front, I do have two quick questions for you. First one is I just got my receptor back.
Yeah.
And I when I sent it in, I switched stone colors. I originally had a peridot, but I had the real stone, and it was the 6mm.
Yeah.
When it came back, it had the one that's not the real stone. How much less does that does it work without the real stone?
I don't know. You'd have to call in on Monday and talk to somebody. I can't focus on that right now because I'm doing a different topic.
Okay.
But on Monday we could take care of that for you.
All right.
Okay.
All right, I'll call back in then.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Yeah. So anyway, what's the deal now? What's with the Dow average is going in the 8,000s, 12,000s. What's the real reason for that? I mean, what's that all about?
Well, it's people who have figured out that the stock market isn't working for them. They're panicked. For starters, this is really accentuated because of all these funds selling short. And you notice the market floats around, and then the last hour, it goes up high or down high. And that's because all these programmed orders come in at the end of the market.
Yeah.
And because people are taking positions on speculating. They're selling short, which means they're selling stock they don't have and they have to cover it. Or they're buying on margin, which means they're buying they're agreeing to buy stock without taking delivery on it, with the obligation to take delivery later. They're betting on.
When they do that, do they have to pay for it then, or do they pay for it later?
Well, they have to pay. They pay a margin. They pay a small percentage of it, and then they have to cover their bet. It's just like a bet.
All right, I got it. Okay, I got it. Yeah.
That's all it is. And the funds are doing it. The mutual funds are doing it, and that's just taking all these people who say they're experts and they can run your money, and they're losing it.
Yeah.
And it's because the market is nothing other than a lottery or a bingo game. Because the investments, the stocks you're buying have nothing to do with an investment. And you got these CEOs who are busy chasing stock price. You can be running a great company, you can be making money hand over fist, but if you don't have a good stock price, everybody's mad at you.
Right.
Nobody wants to buy and hold for long term. Everybody wants instant gratification, and the stock market wasn't originally set up to be instant gratification.
Yeah, so it's just all coming to a head then.
Yeah, I mean, it starts out people buy the stock for a lot less, for a lot more than what it's worth. It's not an investment, it's a lottery ticket.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very similar. Have you ever gone to one of these auctions where they sell unclaimed luggage and you're bidding, you got no idea what's in it?
I've never been to one, but I've seen them.
Yeah, that's kind of what it is. You're buying this stock, it's unclaimed luggage, you got no idea what's in it, but you go ahead and buy it.
Yeah.
And one of the mistakes that people make is they assume that the stock market represents the health of our economy. It doesn't. McCain, I know what I was going to say.
I
know
that.
What I forgot before.
Yeah.
McCain said our economy was fundamentally sound, and he was right. He was right then, and he's still right today. Our economy is fundamentally sound.
Right.
It's our financial system that is on life support.
Exactly.
And the economy and the financial system are not the same. Now, what is happening is that the economy is starting to the financial system is starting to impact the economy because nobody can finance anything.
Right.
But that's the breakdown of the financial system, and it's because all of these assets these banks had, these securities that represent mortgage pools, they finally figured out they aren't worth anything.
Yeah.
So they may, you know, the bank may have a pool of mortgage securities that's valued at $100 million, and then they suddenly realize, whoops, this is really only worth $1 million. We lost $99 million.
Yeah.
And we can't tell anybody about it. And that's what I saw going on. That's what my perceptive was of what was going on with Paulson with these toxic assets. I mean, when they told me 2 months ago, well, we're going to go buy these bad debts because we can't figure out what they're worth. No one can figure what they're worth, but we're going to find out what they're worth, and then we're going to make money on them. I said, yeah, right. I got a bridge in Brooklyn I want to sell you.
Yeah, well, it's sort of like how Enron did it, isn't it?
It's exactly what Enron did. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And
everybody's doing that. That's the pattern now.
Yeah. But we're getting to the point where when the stock market gets around the 5,000-6,000, there are stocks that are really worth money. You can buy a stock for the price represents 10 times earnings. They have a good, solid business model. And you're going to be able to get some good rest. Remember, all this stuff went way down there after 9/11, and then it went back screaming up.
Yeah, I remember 9/11.
Now, I think this recession's going to last a little bit longer. We're going to have some problems with the economy. But when Obama gets in, I think they're going to change the bankruptcy laws. I think they're going to let homeowners go bankrupt and reorganize their debt. I think that's going to put big brakes on all the foreclosures. And we will start to work our way through it. You know, the first thing we got to do to get through this foreclosure mess is to stop the supply.
Right.
Our problem with real estate is more people want to sell than want to buy.
Exactly.
And then the next thing that's going to happen is Obama and McCain are primed to do something about immigration. Now, you got to understand something. If you're an immigrant, if you're an illegal immigrant, you only buy a junk car.
Exactly.
Because you can't get a license, you can't get insurance, and so if you're caught driving the car, it's impounded and you lose it because it costs you over $1,000 to get it out of impound. So all you drive is a piece of junk you're ready to lose.
Right.
You can't buy a house because you may have to leave. And so you send all your money over to Mexico or wherever the hell else you're from to make sure you got something when you get home.
Yeah.
Well, now you give all these people legal status. I mean, these are people who are over here because they want to work.
Right.
You give them legal status, and the first thing they're going to do is go buy the most expensive car they can find.
Exactly. That's why they're trying to do that.
And they ain't going to be buying no cars from Japan.
Yeah.
And they ain't going to be buying no cars from Yugoslavia. They're going to be buying Detroit cars because that's where they are. That's where they want to be.
Yeah.
The next thing they're going to do is go buy homes.
Yeah, exactly.
And, we have the ability to resurrect our economy right within us.
Yeah, that's called the American dream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so immigrants... The illegal immigrants are a big answer to part of...
I like that take on it. That's pretty damn interesting how you put that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, I'd love to take credit for it. It isn't my idea. One of my clients owns a body shop.
Yeah.
And he came over from Mexico illegally.
Yeah.
Legally. I'm sorry. He came over legally. His wife came over, grew up here. She's an immigrant, I think, from Brazil.
Right.
But I was asking him, well, what do you think about this problem?
Right.
And he said, and this was his solution. He's the one who told it to me. Because, being Mexican, got a lot of friends who are illegal.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's a citizen.
Because
he got worried. His wife's a citizen, and he got worried. And he said, they're with all this 9/11 and everything and so on. He got to be a citizen. He asked, I got a green card. If they take my green card and make me go to Mexico, you and the kids going home with me? She said, hell no. I don't know anybody in Mexico. You don't know anybody there either. You go to Mexico, you go by yourself. You want to stay here? You get your damn citizenship. And he did.
That's pretty smart, yeah.
Yeah. Anyhow.
I like the philosophy, you know?
Yeah. And, I mean, it's amazing. I remember I had a black guy who used to own a body shop in Inglewood, California. His name was Jimmy Carter.
I like that name.
Jimmy Carter was president.
Yeah.
And he told me, hey, the only thing I can get to hire here are illegal Mexicans. Nobody else will work for me. I can't hire a black man. He won't work for me. He'll work for the white guy down the street, but he won't work for me. And if I hire a white man, He tries to tell me how to run my business.
That's funny.
Anyhow.
Interesting world, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, but the stock market, you know, everybody, and you hear this watch on the Dow, everybody assumes the economy's bad because of the Dow. Well, the good thing about the stock market going bad is people, you know, if they get a fighting chance, they'll start buying these foreclosed homes and make investments in them.
Yeah.
That's when real estate started going crazy in the first place, was when the stock market crashed at 9/11, and everybody's looking for places to put money.
Yeah. I got another thing for you. What about precious metals, gold and platinum, way up there and now they're way down again? What's your take on that?
Well, I've never been a big believer in those. The problem with those metals is you got to store them.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. I mean, that's why oil went up so high a little bit ago. It was speculating.
Compare that with oil. Oil's down to, what, $60 a barrel now?
Well, I'll go with a corollary. One of my clients is a big farmer in Iowa.
Okay.
And when corn got up, you know, $12-$13 a bushel or whatever it was,
yeah,
he said, this is crazy because I sell it to farmers who feed it to cows.
Yeah, there you go.
Nobody can afford to feed cows this high thing. It's got to come down because there's nobody going to use it.
Right. $13 a bushel, that's an expensive cow.
Yeah.
That cow could eat that bushel in a few hours.
Yeah.
And it's only going to produce, you know, a gallon of milk, which is $3.
Yeah. So the whole thing was, you know, you know everything's got to be in balance. But these people, I mean, I got some real interesting tax policies. The first thing I do is if you don't grow it, improve it, package it, or sell it to a consumer, you pay an 85% tax on your profit with no offset for what you lose.
Yeah.
So let's get the speculators out of business.
I agree.
Short-term capital gains, put them at an 85% capital gain hold period of 2 years for a long term.
Right.
And tax any short-term capital gain at 85%.
That'll do it.
And, I mean, you want people to behave a certain way, you know, you come up with tax policy that encourages people to be responsible.
Exactly.
Why would you surprise that people speculate when the tax policy encourages it?
Yeah.
And the other thing we got to do is get these pensions out of the gambling business.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Because they're a big part of the gamblers buying stuff on margin and buying commodities.
A lot of people aren't going to have a pension.
You know, we gotta have the commodities being sold to people who are actually gonna use it, not people who are gonna hold it.
Yeah, Clark, we're running out of time here. Put out some information about your show and stuff so people can watch you on TV and do things.
Well, thank you very much. You can search right now. You can search YouTube and just search my name, Clark Guerin, ClarkGarren, or Night Bites. That's the name of the show. Spelled NITE, new word, BITES, and we have a whole channel there. We have a couple of shows we have on there. I have my own studio out here in Palm Springs, so we make more.
I love your show, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love your show.
Thank you very much.
I think I like that.
Flattery will get you anywhere, Fred.
Yeah.
What did you tell me you liked? I stepped on you.
Well, like the last time I watched the show, you were going into, I think, stocks, some of the stuff we covered tonight, and you had this other lady on there was with you, and you had a good exchange going with her. And I watched an hour, a part of a five-part series.
Mm.
That was fairly recent.
Okay.
So you cover a lot of the stuff I do, but, I mean, you do a great job, and you got a very nice studio, and I like your intro, and it's really cool how you do all that. You're very professional.
Well, thank you. Flattery will get you anything you want.
Oh, good. I'll come over there and do your show with you sometime.
Love to have you.
Yeah, I'd love to come over there. You're not very far from me, so I'll come over there sometime.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, well, you've been listening to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. Our host, our guest has been Clark Guerin, and has a great show, and he's a lawyer or attorney or, you know, whatever you want to call him, and he's a great politician on the air anyway, and I love his views that are the same as mine, and he's very, very well informed. So until next week, we will be basically getting out of here. It's time for us to get going. So thanks once again for making this the most popular show internet-wise in the non-televised show, although we do a Ustream, which quit on me tonight, but it did come back, but I lost all my viewers. So until next week, thank you for making this a lot of fun.